And now that I'm confined to a plot-driven box, I can go back to telling stories the way that I like to. Or, I guess, the way that he liked to. Russell had an accident. Yeah, it was pretty bad. I'm not sure when he's going to be back on here. He's got some bad motor problems now, and I guess the therapy takes a long time. He'd prefer to tell you guys about the accident himself when he gets back, so I'll leave it at that. In the meantime, he wants me to talk to you guys a little bit about what I do and what kinds of things I've seen. Guess he's got this project going about the stairs, and I've read most of the posts. He told me what kind of things you guys are interested in, and I've spent some time thinking about it, and I'm coming up with a bunch. See, Russell said to make a large post, so I'll make this one a pretty good length if I can. I'm KD, by the way. What I want people to take away from all of this, more than anything, is that you need to take this stuff really seriously. We're not kidding when we tell you to bring survival gear for even brief hikes or climbs. And if you're a free climber, well, this story's for you. Two kids were off free climbing at a park I used to work at in Central Oregon. Of course, doing that is completely forbidden, but they were in a pretty remote area of the park, and it was still pretty early in the spring for most climbers. The morning they were out, I remember there was a layer of ice on everything. It was almost totally invisible. Sometimes that happens if the frost freezes or if there's a little rain overnight, and I remember thinking that it was going to be a bad day just because of that. Anyway, these kids were scaling up a cliff face that they had hit this spot. It must have been in the shade or something like that, and that layer of frost was probably still there. They fell for about the same height, which also leads me to think they literally couldn't grip onto the rock. Their fingernails were broken from dragging them as they fell. Now, they were conscious the whole way down. They had time to think about how they were going to die, and to wonder if it would hurt. And the first kid landed on his feet. How, I have no idea, and both tibia and fibula shattered. The force drove his femurs up through his body, into his ribs, pushing his stomach up into his throat, and tearing through everything else in its path. He didn't die right away. He dragged himself about 2 feet before collapsing. His friend landed on his upper back and neck, which drove his chin into his chest with enough force to shatter his jaw and sternum. Pieces of bone ripped through his heart, and if that hadn't killed him, the impact to the back of his head would have. The bleeding was catastrophic and caused his bright red eyes to bulge out of his skull. They were 15. I specialize in mountain rescues, and a lot of what I do is pick up bodies. If you get in trouble on a mountain and you're not equipped to handle it, you're gonna die. I find so many skiers each year upside down in tree wells, and I wish to God I didn't know what kind of position does to a face. You don't rot in that kind of cold. You mummify, you stay frozen. Most of them are screaming, biting the snow when they die. The little girl I found last winter was sucking her thumb. Sometimes they pull out their hair. They're in there long enough. One woman ripped off her false nails and took the real ones along with them. I'm not sure what she was trying to do. Sometimes we find climbers at the bottom of whatever face they've fallen down. They look fine until you try to move them and the bones click around inside, and that's if you get them before the cold and rigor sets in. Otherwise, they're like big ice cubes. They get cold enough sometimes that if you touch them, your skin sticks. And then sometimes we find the ones that don't belong. I started putting them in a group in my head that I call the accidental stops. Few of the bodies I find as passengers on rides. It helps me piece together how they end up where they do. But these ones get off the ride too soon. They end up in strange places. There's one case where a guy with 3 kids disappeared and left them behind in the woods. Luckily, we found them before anything happened, but we didn't find the guy until the next day. I was in an area of the park that has a lot of ravines and these tricky little rock falls in places. I was climbing up one of the ravines, and in this tiny little space in the rocks, something shines when I get close to it. I back up, got my light in there, and sure enough, he's smashed up in there. Somehow, the guy folded himself into a 3 by 2 foot space. Managed to disintegrate just about every bone in himself in the process. It's pretty amazing how far the neck can stretch when the spine isn't there, and the skin is much more elastic than you'd think. Holding his body was like trying to hold onto a very slippery beanbag. There's just nothing solid in there. A lot of times, it's the kids who are accidentals, little boys especially. Maybe they're the ones who wander off the most. They're the ones we find 2 feet under the bottom of a moving stream, dressed in the clothes they disappeared in. Cause of death undetermined. We find them 10 feet away from where the searches began, curled up in a fern with the top half of their head and their nose sliced off. And when I say sliced, I mean the way those scientists who slice off tiny pieces of brain do it. Perfect. Clean. A boy I knew went missing 3 years ago. He was really sweet, and he came up every year with his troop to go camping in the summer. I used to go up to their campsite on the last night of the trip and tell him scary stories. It was a lot of fun. And he was always very polite. He would roast marshmallows for me, and when he disappeared, he was only 14. He was a really, really good kid. It was actually one of the rare ones that goes missing at night. Much more common for them to go missing during the day, because that's when most of them are up and wandering around. And my guess is that he went off to go use the bathroom, and while he was out there, he noticed them and decided to go investigate. Officially, he wandered off and he got lost. That's the park's way of saying that we have no fucking idea where the kid is, and no idea where to even begin looking. I took the news really hard. I wanted to be part of the team, and I had to fight hard to be included. Normally, they restrict rangers who have any kind of relation to the person from searching, but in this case, they made an exception because the area is largely mountainous terrain. Now, I looked for him for weeks. I hadn't found a single sign that he'd ever stepped out of the camp. Eventually, I came back to the site and started over, going over every inch of the area. If I hadn't done that, I'd never have found him. He was small by that point, just a soccer ball-sized ball of his torso was left, almost perfectly round. It included the curve of a lower rib, a tiny segment of his spine. The spinal cord itself was gone. I found it under a pile of dead pin needles. It was taken to the ME and tested and confirmed. I don't know what they told the parents, but it doesn't really matter. Casket was sealed before they even got there. It would have been cruel to let them see the contents. Like Russell, I have a lot of friends in the service. Stress gets to you, and it's nice to have people that you can talk to about it. Every year I try to meet up with my core group, Russell and 2 others. We go out, we camp in our secret spots during the fall. One year, we invited a couple others, 6 of us in all. We actually rented a cabin out in the Smoky Mountains. One of the best years in memory. I don't think there was a single day that we spent more than a few hours sober. And usually just enough to get into town and pick up food for me. I have to eat a lot because of a condition that popped up suddenly when I was a kid. And we stayed up for a week. And that last night, we were all a little low, I think. We're all feeling the end of vacation blues pretty strong. Suddenly Mike, who's one of the non-regulars, pops his head up from his phone and he looks out the window. "What's up?" I ask him. "I don't know, I thought I saw something move." "Go kill it, I'm hungry," I joked. He laughed, we forgot about it until I got up to get more beer. The cabin didn't have electricity, which is partly why we chose it, so the only light was the fire on the other side of the room. The interior is dark, and it's easy to see out or in at night. I'm on my way to the cooler in the kitchen when I notice someone on the edge of the property making their way towards the cabin. They're dragging themselves along the ground, and I can see that something is really wrong with their legs, and I stand about 2 feet back from the window, and I watch while the others kept talking, completely unaware. The first thing I noticed was that he had no fall clothing. The temperatures can drop very quickly during the season, and anyone out there is going to need at least a coat and a hat if they plan to camp out. Now, this guy is wearing cargo shorts and a tank top. There's no major roads anywhere near here, and the closest cabin is almost 5 miles away, so I know he hasn't had an accident and come for help. Now, there's enough light coming from the windows that I can see that he's very thin. He's dragging himself onto the property with his elbows. His hands are held up, and I can see that the fingers are all broken. They're bent and they're twisted, and when he shuffles forward, they stay rigid. I know, of course, that I need to go and help this man, but I can't bring myself to do it. Too many things just don't add up. I can't figure out where he could have come from. And as he gets closer, I can see there's no dirt on his clothes. There's something wrong with those two. See, I can't tell what it is until he comes forward into the square of light under the window. There are no seams. No collar, hemline. The fabric blends into his skin. It seems to grow out of it, and when he moves, it doesn't bunch up or wrinkle. It's like his clothes is like it's part of him. He's right below the window now. I see that he's making his anguished face as if he's in pain and knows that I'm right there watching, and he drags himself so close to the house that I can see. All I can see are his legs, and that's when I notice his legs and the fact that they're stretched behind him in this long, long line all the way back to the tree line he came from. Where the ankles should be, there's another calf and then another knee and so on, all the way back at least 15 feet, and who knows how much farther beyond that. There's movement at my eye level, and I flinch backwards as he's staring inside at me, and his face reminds me of the mask of tragedy. His mouth is wrenched down so far at the corners, his neck is stretched out, his head hangs from it upside down like some kind of ripe fruit. He looks up at me from this bizarre position with his head hanging off to the side of his neck and his mouth wrenched open like that. And that's when I drop the bottle and go get the rifle out of the mudroom. Everyone reacts and I ignore them, snugging the rifle against my shoulder. But by the time that I get back and I get a good shot, he's gone. I decided to tell them that I'd seen a big coyote. Not because I didn't think they'd believe me, but because I didn't want such a good visit to have to end like that. I have to leave this here for you now, but I'll update sporadically as I have time. I'll do my best.